Stay tuned for a Juneau Afternoon. Brian Holst will be here with an update from the Juneau Economic Development Council. We'll talk with Liz Johnston and Jamie Bursell about the upcoming Ockman Triathlon. We'll get the word about performances by the STAR program at Perseverance Theater, and we'll hear about art happenings in Juneau during Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more on a Juneau Afternoon. That's next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Members of the San Carlos Apache tribe journeyed from their home in Arizona to Washington, D.C. to push for legislation to overturn a law passed in December, which gives their sacred land at Oak Flat to a mining company. They gathered with supporters outside the Capitol building Wednesday to oppose a rider that was tucked into the National Defense Authorization Act. It gives more than 2,000 acres of federal land set aside for their use more than 50 years ago to Resolution Copper. The company plans to develop a 1,500-foot deep mine there. San Carlos Apache Chairman Terry Ramble was among speakers at the event.
We, our religion, is tied to the land. Yes. It has always been that way. The land, the dirt, the rocks, the trees, the birds, everything. They all have special places in our connection to our Creator God. We conduct ceremonies there. We have been conducting ceremonies there since time immemorial.
They're backing a bill introduced by Arizona Congressman Raul Grijalva to undo the land swap and return Oak Flat to federal protection. A new documentary profiles the lives of Tlingit veterans from Hoonah, Alaska, who fought in the Vietnam War. Lisa Fu has more on the film.
When I grew up, I wanted to be a hunter and a fisherman, and I could do both of them.
I don't think any of us said that we were going to be soldiers when we grew up.
When I was in Vietnam, I told myself, if I ever make it out of here, I'm going back home and I'm staying there until the day I die.
That's Donald C., Fred Bennett, and Victor Bean. They're three of the vets Brooklyn filmmaker Samantha Farinella interviewed for her documentary, Hunting in Wartime.
It's basically about the human cost of war and survivability in a community.
Farinella says the film explores Tlingit culture and their connection to the land. As hunters, the soldiers from Hoonah were used to taking life. But in war, it's different.
A good portion of the veterans I interviewed said that when they first had someone in their sights, they tried to think of them as a deer. But as George Lindoff said, I knew I was lying to myself.
When the men returned from war, many had terrible nightmares and experienced post-traumatic stress disorder. Hunting in Wartime explores how, with the help of family and community, many of the vets climbed out of despair. Here's Warren Shakely.
My wife is tough. She slammed me up against the wall, almost knocked my lights out, and said, you talk about it, and I said, okay.
Farinella started the film in 2010. She visited the village several times. Marlene Johnson was one of Farinella's local connections. Johnson was born and raised in Hoonah, and her nephew, Ronald Greenwald, fought and died in Vietnam. Johnson thinks most people in Hoonah are happy about the film.
And I think the veterans are, too, that somebody realizes they did something for their country. And they're, you know, people that have never been thanked for it, I think this, to them, is their thank you.
For National Native News, I'm Lisa Fu.
Flags on the Navajo Nation are at half-staff for Navajo code talker Key Etzidi, who passed away this week. He served during World War II in the South Pacific from 1943 to 45. He later helped oversee 67 Navajo schools and was also a rodeo announcer for more than 50 years. His son Curtis says his father's surname is a common Navajo name that has a unique spelling because a Marine recruiter didn't know how to spell it and guessed, which Curtis says his dad kept. Curtis went on to say that other Marines couldn't pronounce his last name, so they took to calling him Electricity. Key Etzidi was 92 at the time of his death. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at uttc.edu. Support by Humboldt State University's part-time online Master of Social Work. The 3.5-year program focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st for a January start at humboldt.edu/social work.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown. Thanks for joining us on this rainy Thursday, taking a look at the weather. It will continue to be rainy and mostly cloudy for the foreseeable future, with a bit of a chance of a break on Sunday. So keep your raincoat near and get on out there regardless. By the way, on National Native News, we heard a piece on the independent film Hunting in Wartime, a documentary that is in Juneau right now. And we wanted to let you know that additional shows have been added at the Goldtown Theater. They will be this evening at 5:30, Friday at 5:30, and Saturday at 4:30. Take a look at the Goldtown calendar. I saw the documentary last night, and it was very impactful. I encourage you to take a look at it. Again, thanks for joining us. Our first guest today is Brian Holst. He is the Executive Director of the Juneau Economic Development Council. We have quite a few topics to talk about. First, I'm interested, Brian, amongst those topics, one is the Visitor Satisfaction Survey. How happy are people to visit our jewel of a capital city?
Well, good afternoon, Lori and Jeff. Thank you for having me. The Visitor Satisfaction Survey is a piece of work that we do together with the Alaska Committee. This is the third time the Juneau Economic Development Council has done this survey in the last 6 years. And it's the purpose is to measure the visitor satisfaction during the legislative session. And basically, we want to understand how we can better serve our business community and the legislative visitors coming to Juneau. So it's business visitors. It's not tourism visitors. So that's important to know. And so at the airport, with great collaboration from the Juneau International Airport and with the help of Alaska Airlines, who allows us to be inside the departure area, we're able to interview people in 2 months and February and March about their experience in Juneau. And so this survey sheds all sorts of interesting light about how people perceive our community. Really want you to go onto our website at jdca.org and read the whole report. It's posted there. But we can give a few highlights today if we have some time.
Yeah, let's talk about the takeaways.
Yeah, a couple of takeaways. You know, the downtown efforts, we every year, and we do this every few years, but the last three times, we ask people their perceptions of different elements of the community. And something positive is that we're seeing is that in this past year, we've seen that the walkability of downtown, the overall Juneau experience is the highest it's ever been. And so what we really attribute that to the fact that our downtown community really has been picking up their game in terms of trying to make the downtown experience as strong as possible. We've seen the renovation of Main Street. We've seen the new parking garage come in. So we've been doing this since 2009. And that has really made we've seen new canopies added, which makes it easier for people to get around and stay dry. Remember, we're interviewing people during the legislative session. And that's really been very positive. The look and feel of downtown has been our largest improvement since then. Restaurants, also a highlight. The increased availability and the choice of restaurants is noted by our visitors. One element that doesn't rank as well is the value for money, but people love that they have more options. And we also looked at that in terms of accommodations. We broke out this past year to understand a little bit better. We looked at accommodations, but we also looked at the value for accommodations. And accommodations doesn't do as well. We're seeing that lots of people want to stay downtown, but they feel like the value for what they have to pay isn't good. Now, relative to what, you know, these people are Alaskan residents. They're also people traveling from outside of Alaska doing business in Alaska, but primarily Alaskan residents. And in the report, you can nuance some of those elements a bit more.
Now, Brian, does that include rentals, or are we talking lodging, meaning hotel-type space?
Well, we do ask about both. We have seen that our visitors on business since 2009, more and more of them are staying in hotels versus long-term rentals.
Okay.
Right. Parking continues to be a low. In fact, that continues to be the least satisfying element. But it's interesting when we look at the respondents. Those people that are from out of state think our parking is perfectly fine. Those people from Alaska, other parts of Alaska, find our parking to be a real problem. So that's interesting as well. There seems to be a real dissatisfaction with the ability to come from the airport into town, the lack of public transportation, the availability of taxis. And so what we're seeing is people are renting cars, and then they show up downtown, and then they can't park their cars, and then they're also frustrated by that as well. So there are you know, many things that we could contemplate doing in order to address this. You know, maybe there's a easier transportation downtown, and then have a circulator in town to be able to accommodate those people. You know, magically create more parking spaces, of course, would be easy, but that's would be ideal. But that's not. I think there aren't a lot more places that we can park vehicles downtown. When we ask about what would people like to see Juneau, how Juneau can improve itself as a destination for people that are working in government business or other business. And access is an important issue. What people want is they mention the road, but more than that, they mention they want more flight options and cheaper airfares. And it's also, I think, valuable to notice that we noticed last summer when Delta was here for their first summer, we saw an overall increase in the number of visitors, while at the same time the prices went down. I guess that's not surprising. What I guess we thought might happen was, these two companies are just going to compete against each other over a decreased market. But the impact on our community was that more people traveled to and from Juneau. And so I think we could see that might be a possibility for these airlines to explore as well, is if we added capacity during the legislative session, it would meet one of the main concerns that our people traveling to Juneau on business during the session have, is that not only does it cost a lot, but it's inconvenient the times for their work. So there are, again, conversations to be had with the airlines. I think finally, aside from parking, the other thing that nobody likes is our weather. And I can see Jeff Brown putting up a giant umbrella over all of Juneau in one of his publications. But until we can do that, we need to find ways to continue to increase the canopies, make it easier for people that are on business to circulate amongst the Capitol complex. And those are all items that I know that the businesses downtown, the Downtown Business Association, the city, have all been working towards. And I should go back to the first element, which is that the downtown revitalization efforts that have been ongoing for the last several years appear to be changing the perception of
have been positively noticed. So did I hear you say that the survey was conducted for the Alaska Committee?
That's right.
So the materials, the information go then back to the Alaska Committee. And what happens then? Does JEDC have a further role in trying to respond to the survey information, or are you simply the gatherer of feedback?
It's a joint project between the Alaska Committee and the Juneau Economic Development Council. So we conduct the work, we pay for part of it, they pay for part of it. For the listeners that don't know, the Alaska Committee is a organization in Juneau of community volunteers that meets monthly and they meet at our offices, and their only task is to talk about how can we be a better capital city. So, of course, this information is very important to them. They use this information to be able to help to advise the city about different options that we should be considering to serve better in our role as a capital city. Hugely important for our local economy, obviously, is us being a great capital city.
So let's take the example of transportation from the airport. I've experienced this myself. It sometimes is very difficult, and oftentimes you may end up waiting. There's not room in the shelter. There's no transportation available. Let's take that as an example. So with that knowledge, what might JEDC and or the Alaska Committee do in terms of taking some concrete steps in response to that information?
Excellent. So specific, concretely, things that we have been doing is supporting the work of a circulator. So in our meetings with downtown revitalization working groups, one idea that has come up over the years consistently is the need for a downtown circulator, which would, if people knew that once they got downtown, it would be easy to circulate themselves, then they might not want to need to rent a car. So the taxis respond to demand. Lots of people rent cars. It's a bit of a catch-22. I'm sure if more people wanted taxis, there'd be more taxis, and that's a difficult one to work out. The buses not being particularly close to the airport makes that not a very easy option. So that could be also something that could be considered. You know, we've also looked at this notion of Zipcar, which are these
quick rent.
Right, where you can
grab it and go down to wherever you need to park it and leave it there.
Right, or if you can get downtown, you don't need to rent a car and have it follow you with you wherever you go. You can be a member in one of these car sharing programs and be able to use that car when you need it and then put it back to where it is so someone else could use that. So multiple people are using the same vehicle. So we've reached out to that organization, Zipcar. And they have evaluated Juneau. They have said that it is an interesting market for them, but they just told us in the last month that we're not in their 2015 plans, but we might be in their 2016 plans.
Well, let's take a moment to talk about one other aspect of JEDC, which is new, and that is that your organization will take over the hosting, the administration of the hosting of AmeriCorps volunteers here in Juneau. And for folks who don't know, AmeriCorps and VISTA are almost like a domestic Peace Corps, meaning that typically young, but not always, individuals serve for a minimal amount of pay for a year or two, and usually with a nonprofit. So why did JEDC take this on?
Well, we see, like many organizations and many people in the community, we see the important value to Juneau for to be able to access these volunteers. You know, the program has existed in Juneau for a long time. The organization that had been delivering and supporting the volunteers was no longer able to do that. And so there were, I'm sure, many organizations were contacted, and we saw that there weren't a lot of organizations that were willing or had the administrative capacity or the interest to take on this role. So we have a one-year agreement. It can be extended for multiple years. So we thought, well, let's go ahead and try this. One of the main objectives of JEDC is talent development. And you know, when our board was discussing whether or not to step into this role, not only did we think about you know the positive impact that this can have on these service organizations, but we also recognize that there are many former AmeriCorps volunteers in our community.
That's true.
And so it is a valuable way to bring in young, talented, motivated people to Juneau to do some service. And then if they like what they see and enjoy our community, they're great. It's a great pool of talent to attract to Juneau as permanent residents. So that was a piece that the board took into consideration when they gave us the green light to go ahead and pursue this opportunity. So we're really thrilled about doing this. We're just getting started. We're still in a position where if an organization is looking for an opportunity to host a volunteer, to please contact us.
So we've been talking with Brian Holst. He is the executive director of the Juneau Economic Development Council, and we focused today on the visitor satisfaction survey, that is those business visitors to Juneau during our legislative session, as well as the JEDC's new role as the coordination center for those who wish to host AmeriCorps volunteers. So, Brian, please give us a phone number and a website where people can seek more information on either of those topics.
Great. Well, our website is jedc.org, Juneau Economic Development Council.org, and you can reach us at 523-2300.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 23rd of July, 2015. It was on this night in 1967, a riot broke out in Detroit, which marked the beginning of the decline of that great city. An all-white squadron of police officers decided to raid a bar in a black neighborhood where there was a party to welcome home two recent veterans of the Vietnam War. The police stormed the bar, they rounded up and arrested 85 black men and began loading them into vans. There was a riot that followed that raged for 5 days. Thousands of National Guard were called in. Tanks came into the city. National Guard fired off more than 150,000 bullets in the course of it. 43 people were killed. Whole blocks of the city went up in flames. After the riots, many of the white residents moved to the suburbs, thousands of homes abandoned, the city's population plunged by more than a half million in just a few years, and by 1990, Detroit was one of the poorest cities in America, one in every three residents living in poverty. It was on this day, 1903, the Ford Motor Company in Detroit sold its first car, a two-cylinder Model A. Painted red, it could seat two people and get up to 28 miles per hour. They sold 2,000 Model A's over the next 2 years, and that made the Ford Motor Company profitable. 5 years later, they rolled out the Model T. And it's the birthday of Raymond Chandler, born in Chicago, 1888, who wrote seven novels featuring the detective Philip Marlowe. He was the vice president of an oil company when the Depression hit, and the combination of the Depression and his wife's failing health took a toll on him. He started drinking heavily, and he started writing in 1932, hoping to make a quick buck. He wrote pulp fiction for magazines, detective magazines, and wrote his first novel in 3 months. The Big Sleep came out in 1939, made into a classic film noir starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, followed by Farewell, My Lovely, The Little Sister, The Long Goodbye. He also wrote screenplays, Double Indemnity, The Blue Dahlia, and Strangers on a Train. Here's a poem for today by Denise Levertov entitled A Reward. Tired and hungry, late in the day, impelled to leave the house and search for what might lift me back to what I had fallen away from, I stood by the shore, waiting. I had walked in the silent woods, the trees withdrew into their secrets, dusk was smoothing breadths of silk over the lake, watery amethyst fading to gray, ducks were clustered in sleeping companies, afloat on their element, as I was not on mine. I turned homeward, unsatisfied, but after a few steps I paused, impelled again to linger, to look north before nightfall, the expanse of calm, of calming water, last wafts of rose in the few high clouds, and was rewarded. The heron, unseen for weeks, came flying wide-winged toward me, settled just offshore, on his post, took up his vigil. If you ask why this cleared a fog from my spirit, I have no answer. A Reward, a poem by Denis Levertov from Evening Train, published by New Directions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Progressive Insurance, with its APRON project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, located at 3045 Riverside Drive in the Valley. July swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/parkrec. Diamond Park Aquatic Center is also offering swim lessons on Tuesdays and Thursdays and on Saturday mornings during the summer season. More information at 586-2782.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon on this rainy Thursday. Lori Scandling here with you and Jeff Brown at the board. In the studio with us are two guests. We're going to be talking about the Achman Triathlon, which is set for August 1st. We have Liz Johnston, who is the coordinator of the event, and Jamie Bursell, who is a coach for triathlons. Welcome. Glad you're here. Let's talk a little bit about this is the seventh annual Achman Triathlon. What's the route, Liz? What should people expect? We know that a triathlon involves your bicycle and a whole bunch of running and some swimming. How will that work this year, and what is the route?
The route starts at the lake, Elk Lake. It's the transition area, though. Everything takes place at the University of Alaska Southeast. So we ask people to park up at the university, get participants can get their gear together and set up their own transition area up there, and then walk down to the start at the boat launch at Auk Lake.
So swimming first.
Swimming first, yes. Wetsuits are required for the swim. It has been a warm year, but it's still cold enough to require wetsuits. And it starts with a 750-meter swim. And then participants run back up to the university, hop on their bike, and swim out to the glacier, which is round trip of 19 kilometers.
Okay.
And then they come back to transition, throw on their running shoes, and run on the trail by Auk Lake out to the road and back. And that's a 5-kilometer run.
So is this like a half triathlon, meaning that they're not swimming the usual amount for a full triathlon, and 19 kilometers is about 12 miles? So that sounds like... So tell me about the triathlon. I think a full one is a bit bigger than that. Is that right?
It is. Well, there's different... This is generally called a sprint triathlon.
Okay.
Anything or a short triathlon. There's different fun races around the country nowadays that have even less or similar distances, but it's called a sprint. And Jamie Bursell could maybe speak more to this as well. Generally, there's an Olympic distance, which is about twice. And then the half Ironman triathlon is about twice that, except not quite with the swim. It's about the same as an Olympic. And then there's the full Ironman.
So there's a whole lot of combinations, it sounds like. So I want to talk to Jamie in a moment. But before we move on to that, Liz, what time should people be parking and checking in? And what is the cost to participate?
So to register as a racer, you actually have to register by noon on July 31st, and it completely cuts off. All registration takes place online.
Okay.
So I'd love to share the website. There's a link to registration. So you have to register by noon Friday, and then you have to show up Friday evening at 5:30 at the university for a briefing. So, I just gave a quick description, but we want participants to know the rules. There are a number, and participants to know what the course is like and to talk through that. And then they pick up their race numbers and T-shirt that evening.
So they're ready. They should be ready for to take off in the morning.
Yes.
Liz, what is the website? Let's go ahead and give that.
Achman, AUKEMAN.weebly.com.
so they must register online by noon next Friday. And what is the cost?
It is $60.
Okay.
But you must also be a USA Triathlon. You either have to be a yearly member, which is $45, I believe, for an adult, or you have to buy a day pass, which is $12. And so that covers, provides some insurance and that sort of thing. So you can do that online when you register. You can either provide your number if you're already an annual member, or you can sign up.
Okay, we'll announce that again before we finish this segment. Jamie, you've been involved with triathlons for a long time. In fact, you said you had been for some time the organizer of the Aukman event, and you're coaching now. And we were chatting a bit before we went on the air. Is it my imagination, or has there been almost an explosion of interest in this kind of athleticism?
Oh, you're right about that, Lori. There's been a huge explosion in the interest in multi-sport events, and it's just a lot of fun. I think that the attraction is being able to do three sports back-to-back well enough that you can get to the finish line. People really strive to have the goal of finishing, especially for the longer events. But for this event, too, this is a big deal for people who've been training a lot to be able to swim the distance, get on the bike and bike the distance, and then finish off with a good run. I have a group of 14 people that I'm working with right now specifically to get ready for the Aukman Triathlon, and last night we did the run-through for the first time. Some people, the very first time, they've gone through all three of those different disciplines back-to-back, and they were thrilled. It was a really exciting night. So I think, too, with the multi-sport events, people seem to have less likelihood of injury, and I think that is because you're not just always pounding the road as we do in running, or not just being in one position on the bike, or even not just swimming, but the multi-sport events allow for some recovery. You can always recover on the bike and in the pool after you've done a hard run. You can always recover on the bike after a swim. It's
some serious cross training then.
Yeah, some serious cross training, and people really reap the rewards of excellent health and fitness, and it's just very exciting and fun.
Well, Jamie, you're an athlete. I know you've competed in all kinds of things in our community and beyond. What do you find as a coach is the biggest challenge in working with those who, say, may be new to a multi-sport competition like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely a confidence thing coming into the sport, and it seems to get hold of people pretty quickly, though, in triathlon. I have 14 people that I'm working with in my Aukman training camp to get ready for this competition. And in the beginning, I asked how many people were planning to do the event, because sometimes people sign up and they say, I just want to do this. It just looks like fun. But I asked early on how many people are planning to do the event, and slowly some raised their hands, most raised their hands, but now every one of them has signed up. So even people that are very new to it, they're excited. They've progressed just in the last few weeks. They've come along really well. I've given them a lot of tips and tricks for moving quickly through transition, and a lot of them got new wetsuits, and it's just very, very exciting and fun for adults to find something that they can actually feel accomplished with and have fun with, play with their friends.
I would guess there are probably quite a few adults who maybe they swim. Maybe they run. Maybe they enjoy their bike. For those who do one of those sports but might be interested in expanding their competitive repertoire, what would you recommend they do to get more involved in this kind of competition?
Well, when we talk about triathlon and persons, the things that they're good at and maybe not so good at, we look at the limiter, what we call the limiter of the sport. And for a lot of people, it's the swim. Maybe they swam when they were a kid, but they just didn't keep up with it, or they weren't on the swim team. So for a lot of people, starting off with the swim and trying to improve on their limitations, that's the big key. And so we have great swim coaches here available for adults. We've got a master's swim program through the Glacier Swim Club, and there are many times during the week that the Glacier Swim Club masters meet at both pools. You can go to any, or you can go to all of the practices and get good coaching. Often people think that the master's program is just for the real excellent swimmers, but it's not. It's for people over age 18.
That's helpful to know.
That's all that it takes. And then you've got a great built-in coaches. And then as far as the other sports, if the limiter is running, it's a pretty simple thing to do. Southeast Roadrunners is a great club that you can join up with, and many, many events through the summer. And then for biking, there's the Freewheelers Club. And once again, many events. So there's an event tonight that the Freewheelers are putting on. It's the Thane Time Trial. It's at about a 10-mile race out to the end of Thane and back.
So there are many local organizations mm-hmm. where you can seek support, and you don't have to be an expert when you start. You know, you mentioned 18 or older. Liz, are there age restrictions on the competition in the Aukman Triathlon?
Yes, it's 15 and older.
15 and older. And how many folks have signed up so far? Do you have a handle on that?
As of today, we have 50.
50 individuals. And this is not a team relay competition, is that right?
This particular race at this time is just individuals.
Individuals. And what's the incentive other than being, fully engaged physically? In other words, are there some prizes for winners?
There are. And I just wanted to add, too, that I do a lot of training on my own and just love it, but I'm really slow. And so it's fun to be with people like Jamie that are really competitive and to see people push, that are really good at the sport. But it's also just really fun, and I feel there's something about the three sports where I don't care that I'm slow, but I can just go out and have fun, right? And so I'll probably never win a prize in a race, but we do have prizes for this race for the top three in each age group. I looked at the age group breakdown today, and there's still a lot of age groups with zero people, one people, and I should add that's per gender.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so, yeah, everybody, and then everyone gets a shirt. And everyone got a medal, and like if they cross the finish line. And so we're actually still looking. A lot of the bigger prizes for those top, at least the top three in each gender, we're looking for, if any businesses, we rely on them to donate.
Sure. Sure. Well, thanks for joining us today. We're talking with Jamie Bursell, who's a longtime competitor and now coaching at least 14 people who are going to be triathlon competitors. Coming up next weekend on Saturday, August 1st, the Aukman Triathlon in its seventh year. If you're interested, please go to this website, Aukman, AUKEMAN .Weebly. That's WEEBLY.com. And we've been visiting with Lynn Johnson, who's putting together the organization of the Aukman this year, and the cost is $60. You must register by noon next Friday, the 31st of July, and attend a 5:30 p.m. briefing at UAS. Thanks for your work on this. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Thanks. I just wanted to add, for people that want to just come out and see the race, it does start at 7:30. You can be at the lake, you could be on the road.
And Liz, you said you could use some volunteers, too. Should they call a number or just go on the website to find out more about that?
The website's the easiest. There's a link there where you can send an email directly about volunteering.
So if you're not quite in shape to do the triathlon, join the group anyway in terms of being a spectator or a volunteer.
Yep. It's a great opportunity to see how it goes if you're interested in the future.
Thanks to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, a
up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
And we're back with the Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining us. In the studio is Morgan Ozenbaugh. Did I say that right, Morgan?
Ozenbaugh.
I was kind of close. She is an education intern with the STAR program, which is a summer theater program offered by Perseverance Theater. And she's also going to be acting as stage manager in some upcoming performances. And Shona Osterhout, did I say that right, Shona?
Close enough.
All right. Also with the STAR program. Why don't we begin with what STAR stands for and talk about the upcoming culmination of the summer workshops and the shows that will be performed in the coming weekend.
Sure. STAR stands for Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous, and it's a five-week program for students ages 10 to 18 who are interested in theater, who love theater, who are really passionate about theater. It takes a long, you know, we rehearse those kids 4 hours a day, and it's 5 weeks of their summer, so it's really not for the theater faint of heart. But we do, you know, as long as you have an enthusiasm to learn and a willingness to jump on stage and be goofy like the rest of us, then we say, come on down, regardless of your experience. We have kids in there who've done the program. This year we have one girl who's graduating from the program. I say we call it graduating. I don't even know what that means. But she's done. She's aged out now. But she's done the program for, I think, the last 7 years. So there's returning students. And then, of course, we have brand new students also. And they get to choose which show. So we have performances that they choose a show to get to be in. So,
and there are two shows that will be performed. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Morgan, you want to say what those beautiful shows are?
Yeah, we have Thoroughly Modern Millie Jr. as our musical. And the other piece is titled Shakespeare's Stars. It's the students actually took Shakespearean monologues and scenes, and they adapted them into a new play.
And both begin this weekend with several performances, but that's not the only weekend. There will be some the following weekend, if I'm correct. Do you want to talk about those specifics or perhaps give the website where people can find that, Shona?
Yeah, sure. So I'll give a quick rundown. So the shows perform this Friday. They open tomorrow night, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's both matinee and evening performances. And then we start a second round of performances the following weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that schedule is online at ptalaska.org. And it's a great place you can go and find out this Perseverance STAR schedule for the kids' shows, as well as other Perseverance information like becoming a season subscriber.
How many years has STAR been offered in Juno? You mentioned that somebody's about to age out and it's ages 10 to 18. Has it been going 8 years or longer than that?
32 years. We're in the
That's a few generations.
Yeah, we're in the 30. I think this is actually the 33rd year. And I mean, there's people in this town who have run it for years. This is actually my 13th year doing it. I can't believe that. But Jamie McLean is a wonderful theater artist in town, you know, has run this program for years before. Anita Maynard-Losh also ran this program. So there's just been a lot of Junoites and former Junoites who've really taken this program to new levels. It won the National Endowment for the Arts Kids Recognition Award as one of the outstanding programs in the country. So it's definitely not one that's going away anytime soon.
It's well established.
Yeah.
And how many, Morgan, how many youth are in the program this summer?
We have about 35 this year.
And does someone have to have experience or just the enthusiasm that Shona mentioned, meaning if a kid has never been exposed to theater or had that opportunity, can it work for that kid?
We actually have a nice mix of both, and the new students get to learn from the experienced students. But we do have probably 7 students or so that have never done the program before, and they're getting to learn what stage right means, what stage left, some of the theater jargon, and they're also getting to learn from their fellow performers and the directors and stage managers.
Now, does every kid have a speaking role or, like in actual theater, there are a whole bunch of jobs, and not all of them are on stage. What can a kid expect in terms of perhaps being the talent, as it were?
All the kids audition on the first day of the program for what role they're going to have in the show. This is an all on-stage program, and the thing that I really love about the STAR program and why I love to do it year after year is that the kids are all on stage, and then we get professional, long-time theater artists to build the sets, do the costumes, build the props. So their production values are that of, you know, a theater show that we would put on. And that's something that I really love. So you'll see these kids under good lighting. You'll see them on a great set. You'll see them in costumes that work well. So that's part of, I think, something that Perseverance Theater really does well. We put a lot of effort into our production elements, and that definitely shows with our kids, too.
Now, we wanted to talk for a moment about theater in the wild. Tell me about that, Shona, or Morgan, whoever is most involved.
Sure. Well, Morgan is going to come out there for the first year this time, too. But I bet you once she gets out there, she'll be like, I'm going to come back for that theater in the wild. This is the second year the program is in existence. And essentially what theater in the wild is, this is for high school students only. So it's a more intensive program. It's a week out in the woods. So we all go out to Boy Scout cabins, the beach out there, Boy Scout camp. And we spend a week learning wilderness skills. So we have wilderness survival, we have wild edibles, we have kayaking, we have fishing, and then we also do theater skills. So we'll do some of the stuff that I didn't even learn until I was in college. We're talking Suzuki and viewpoints and all these different kinds of theater skills that will help build better actors, essentially. So the thing that kind of made this program happen was that I spend a lot of time outside and I spend a lot of time in the theater. And those are the two things that I really like to do. And the reason I think that theater artists stay in this community is because of how beautiful it is. And it's such a supportive arts community. So the idea is that what is an actor using in their surroundings to inform their work on stage? Because what happens is we pretend, you know, many times on stage we'll pretend we're in a forest. And then we go on stage and, yeah, we have a fake forest. But, you know, how do we actually learn from our surroundings and bring that to a black building, you know, that has no
forestry
at all. What
a nice integration of two strong influences in this community. What are the dates of Theater in the Wild? And I assume the website has more information.
Exactly. The program starts August 3rd. It's August 3rd through the 8th. And this is for high school students only. We still have some slots available. It is, the cost is $450. There are scholarships available. I would encourage students who like theater to really come out, because it's we're going to be working on monologues so students can have audition materials to get into college, because that's also something in our community that people really need.
Well, thanks for the information. That's a lot of good stuff to go on. We're talking with Morgan Ozenbaugh. Am I closer?
Yes, you're closer.
Great. And Shona Osterhout from Perseverance Theater, and we've been talking about the STAR program, which is for youth who are ages 10 to 18, and the culmination of that program will be some performances, which begin this Friday and run this weekend as well as the following Thursday through Sunday. Two plays will be offered by those participants. And then upcoming, Theater in the Wild, a one-week experience out at the Boy Scout camp beginning August 3rd, targeting high school students to learn the integration of theater skills in a natural setting. There is a charge for that, but there are scholarships. Lots of information on the Perseverance Theater website. You don't have to know how to spell it all. Just look for PT Alaska. Is it .org?
That's correct.
.org. Well, thank you. Hope you have a good turnout for your shows.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Let's talk about nests. Every spring, robins build their cup-shaped nests using grass and mud. Orioles weave a hanging sac. It takes a week or two. It's hard work, and yet, once the chicks fledge, mostly the structures won't be reused. Cliff swallows, on the other hand, will often reuse nests. They'll spend a week plastering their mud structure on a sheer cliff face, use it, and the next year, unless parasites have moved in before them, fix it up and they're good to go. Bigger birds, herons, hawks, or eagles, often reuse a nest for many years. One bald eagle pair in Vermilion, Ohio, reused the same nest for 34 years, adding branches each year until it weighed more than 2 tons. But Europe's migratory white storks get the award for best reuse. One nest site, still used in 1930, and likely seeing many repairs over the years, dated back to 1549. That's a continuous series of stork pairs nesting in one spot for 381 years. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And we're back. Another segment on a Juno Afternoon. Lori Scandlin here with you in the studio with our producer, Jeff Brown. Our two guests are Chris Keller and Beth Leibowitz, and we're talking about Aikido, which is, someone needs to define this for our audience.
Aikido is a Japanese martial art. It was founded in the last century by Morihei Ueshiba, who was a very well-known martial artist in Japan. He studied with a teacher who taught the traditional samurai jujitsu, and then changed Aikido, particularly after the end of the Second World War. Before the war, he had been one of the most well-known martial artists in Japan, and taught at a lot of the military academies, as well as to many people. He's also a very spiritual man, and when the war came, his spiritual teacher had been thrown in jail, and he was very ambivalent about what was happening in Japan, and he retired to the countryside to a small farming village. And after the war, he continued to teach and develop the modern martial art of Aikido, and so it has very much a spiritual component that was the result of his experiences in Japan at that time.
And there is a dojo here in Juneau, it sounds like. Is that correct, Beth?
It's correct, and you're looking at the instructor. That would be Chris Keller right here.
Beth, do you find this is mostly a male-dominated activity? Are you one of the few women, or do you find it is welcoming to all?
Well, it's pretty welcoming, and right now the three students who are most consistent are all women.
Well, that says something. Chris, would it be fair to say then that the spiritual aspect of Aikido is what distinguishes it from other martial arts?
Very much so. the technique and the physical parts are very close to jujitsu, and that's where the founder derived them from. But his spiritual approach to the art is really what distinguishes Aikido from other arts.
What kind of emphasis would someone experience on the physical side? I mean, I can picture karate and judo. Tell us a little bit about what the physical positions of and activities are in the Aikido, or Beth can speak to that, whoever's most...
unlike a karate, which is primarily a striking art, this has a lot more of throws and joint locks, so it's manipulating the body to take balance or to otherwise control. And we spend a lot of time practicing falling, basically tumbling and falling, because if you cannot tumble or fall safely, then you cannot work with the technique or receive a technique. So then your partners can't practice with you. So we practice both doing the technique and a lot of falling and tumbling, simply so that we can practice relatively safely.
Is Aikido intended as a defensive martial arts or more of the art of physical expression?
It's a defensive art. the founder and my teacher, who was one of his direct students, always emphasized that it is very much a practical martial art. But many people practice it all over the world, and so it's suitable for older people, for young people, although we don't have a children's program to train as a physical activity for exercise and good health, as well as learning to defend oneself.
Beth, you mentioned practice. How many hours a week are you practicing?
Let's see, I'm usually in class at least 3 days a week, and each class is an hour and a half, so.
4.5, 5 hours then of practice.
Well, let's see. Yeah, about.
And Chris, the spiritual side, is that part of the movement that is taught, or is it a supplement after the physical workout, for example?
It's a part of the training. A big part of it is, overcoming, natural, reactions and inclinations, and particularly in a physical confrontation, we have, a natural fight reaction that because of, the way that
how we're wired.
Humans are.
Yeah.
And trying to overcome that and use the technique and being able to, defend yourself and overcome an opponent with the minimum amount of force applied, rather than just beating on them until they stop whatever it was they were doing.
Chris, if somebody listening wanted to learn more about this style or about the dojo where your studio is and classes, what's the best way for them to get additional information?
We have a webpage.
Okay.
So it's junoaikidojo.com.
Okay, you can spell that.
or Google Juno Aikido, A-I-K-I-D-O.
A-I-K-I-D-O. So it's Juno Aiki.
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 Do.
Do.
And then Jo. Dojo is just
so
the Japanese
dojo, right. And that's
term for the practice
the place.
Hall.
So is that .com or .org?
.com.
Okay, let me spell that one more time. So it's Juno, AIKIDOJO.com to learn more about the Aikido practice here in Juneau. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having us on.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, working with medical professionals to diagnose hearing disorders and prescribe solutions. Northland Audiology and Hearing Services. Information at 789-6780.
The air we breathe, the water we drink, the climate that makes it possible for humans to thrive. These are things that are under stress in our changing world. So what's a person to do? Well, you can tune in to Living on Earth. Hi, I'm Steve Kerwood, and every week we keep you informed of the choices you can make to make a better life for you, your family, and your community. That's Living on Earth from PRI.
Sundays at 2 on KTOO News.
Well, thanks for sticking with us this Thursday afternoon, and we conclude every Thursday afternoon with Arts Up with our friend from across the street, Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Nancy, I always feel so loaded with great information about what's up in our community. Fill us in on what I might have missed this week.
Okay, so first, the calendar is at jahc.org because we're not going to hit it all.
It's a goldmine. It really is.
Yeah, so there's tons of things. There's live music. There's films for kids. There's just a whole bunch of things going on. Friday, of course, we have Food Truck Friday. We have Jeff Morgan, and it's followed by the Njuzu Marimba Band, which is always such fun, and that is followed by Ballroom Dance, so we hope that you'll come. Traveler Trio is at Rockwell that evening. We've got, as I mentioned, the Goldtown Nickelodeon is doing kids animated shorts film camp.
I saw that on the
weekend calendar.
Yes,
it is. And there's comedy with Tracy Smith out at Suite 907 on Saturday night. We've got some painting at Eagle Beach at 10:30 on Sunday morning. It goes all afternoon. Let's hope for a nice sunny day.
Oh, or at least a break. At least a little bit of a let up.
I love Payne's Gray. It's a lovely color. It works really well in this thing. But as I mentioned, we don't get to it all. So do come to the website, jahc.org, and we'll see you on Friday.
Hope so. Taking a look at the weather, looks like it's going to be pretty rainy for the next 4 or 5 days with a bit of a break, perhaps on Saturday.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators KTOO.